Hello, and welcome to the Three Links Oddcast, your podcast for all things having to do with Odd Fellowship. And now, here are your hosts.
All right, and we are back with another episode of the Three Links Oddcast. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Pig and a Pug Bath Stuff. Yes, Pig and a Pug Bath Stuff, for stuff that smells good and gets you clean. And I am here tonight with our co-host, Toby Hansen.
Oh, thank you so much, Brother Ainsley. It's great to be back with another podcast. We had to take a couple weeks off because you were busy with the Odd Market there in Illinois. I had the Leavenworth International Accordion Celebration and, of course, our grand sessions here in Washington. And that leads me perfectly to the subject of this show. As most of our listeners here in North America know, June is a very special month when we celebrate the unique and wonderful things about our culture. Yes, June is National Accordion Awareness Month, so we have a very special episode of the podcast planned here where we're going to be
Toby, I thought we already talked about this.
I
thought we weren't doing the accordion episode. We were going to do that next year.
Next year,
we were going to trade. We were going to do the Pride Month special this year.
Well, yeah, when you said Pride, I thought that was Pride in the accordion. It's National Accordion Awareness Month. I mean, come on. Who doesn't have pride in their accordions? I have lots of accordion pride.
but wait. No, but our guest doesn't know a thing about accordions. What's he going to talk about?
I don't know. I guess I must have missed the memorandum on that. So
yeah, we had a whole email thread. You must have been busy at your session and didn't read it.
I guess so. I, you know, honestly, as a past grandmaster who's so much in demand to advise the impressionable young odd fellows who attend our sessions, I must have missed that. So tell me, brother, what exactly is the subject of this very special episode of the Three Links Oddcast?
So tonight we are going to be discussing LGBTQ pride and odd fellowship.
Something
that we have not really discussed yet on the show. I've written about it a little bit on the Heart and Hand blog, but it's something that has a lot of depth and breadth that people might not be aware of.
Well, that's great. I know at least a couple of our past grandmasters here in Washington will take a very personal interest in this topic. So I'm assuming we have a guest all lined up for tonight.
Yes. So I would like to welcome the new office manager, store runner. I don't know exactly what your position is, title is, but Christopher Emmons from the Sovereign Grand Lodge office.
Woohoo! Welcome, Brother Chris.
Welcome.
Yes, thank you. It's nice to be on.
Well, it's great to have you here. So to start out with, tell us a little bit about your background as an odd fellow and how it was that you ended up working at the Sovereign Grand Lodge office in North Carolina.
Okay, so about 4 years ago, I started Odd Fellows. It was in 2018. So June of 2018, I started, put an application in, got accepted in Charleston, West Virginia. So Canal 25 is my home lodge. I went to a degree day, got all my degrees, joined, became very active. Our lodge meets every week there. So it's kind of nice to just jump completely into it and just completely be an odd fellow. Shortly after I joined Canton, we started a new Canton back up. It got reinstituted. And then I joined Encampment. So it's pretty active. I'm a past grand in my regular lodge. And last year, right after session, I found out about the Sovereign Grand Lodge hiring. I applied. I was given an interview and did a Zoom meeting and was basically offered a position here. So I work in supply. I do shipping, receiving, process all the orders. I go out and do sales at some of the sessions. So I just stay pretty active with that. But other than that, and now just recently joined Rebecca's here in North Carolina. So I'm now part of all the branches of the order, which is very nice. So that's how I came to get here. And that's basically my brief history of Oddfellows for myself.
So you were living in West Virginia, but now you work in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. So did you have to move down there or?
Yes, I did. I moved down here in September of last year. So I've been here almost a year. So
it's a big commitment.
It definitely is a giant commitment, but I enjoy it. So keeps me busy.
That's great. So you would be the person, you said you work in shipping and things like that. When a jurisdiction calls up the Sovereign Grand Lodge and says, help, we have so many first-time past grands, we need a bunch of past grand jewels. You're the
correct.
Person who
does that.
Correct,
yes. There's the secretaries, scribes, and adjutants of whatever the department or their, you know, Rebecca Assembly is. They just have to send orders to me, and I get those processed and shipped out usually same day if I have everything in stock. So,
okay, so what you're saying is waiting 8 months for a past grand, past chief patriarch jewel, that's a thing of the past now.
Yes, very much so. Long as you might be waiting on some things, it just depends. It's probably about 2 months. That's the latest on some of the stuff. I've been trying to keep a little extra stuff on hand of regular stuff, unless it's special order. That is the stuff that's taking up to 2 months. But you're not waiting like that they used to. So it's definitely nice to get people stuff when they need it, and there's no questions asked.
So if it takes 2 months, it's because it's literally being made.
Correct. It's special order. And in a sense, some stuff might be even longer if it takes, if it's like, you know, 10 karat gold or silver or something like that. Those are obviously a little bit longer layovers for that. But other than that, usually about 6 to 8 weeks, depending. But I try to tell people usually it's sooner. But
that's fantastic. I think it is so wonderful the way the Sovereign Grand Lodge has been moving forward and embracing new ways of getting things done to ensure that we can continue to feed the growth that is happening in Odd Fellowship. I think it's absolutely wonderful because if members are going to move up through the order, we got to make sure that they can get supplies in a timely manner. And I think it's wonderful that you've been doing all this work and helping Terry, because I'm sure Terry probably appreciates having somebody who's really on top of things working with him.
Yes, he does. And he's definitely a great mentor. There's a lot of stuff that I had to pick up and learn. There's still things I'm learning. I probably go to his office 20 times a day to ask some questions, but I'd rather go ask questions than do something wrong or just assume something.
Well, we're certainly very fortunate to have someone like Terry, because Terry, you know, they joke about someone being in an organization for a long time, knowing where all the bodies are buried. But I'm sure that Terry probably knows how to do just about everything that needs to be done in the office. And so I'm sure he's a wonderful person to help get you oriented with where you're going and what you're doing.
Correct. Yes, definitely. It's one of those resource that's shouldn't be forgotten about, or that's stuff I try to learn. I try to learn as much as I can from him. So,
well, that's great. So for the focus of this episode, it's Pride Month. It's June. It's the wonderful time of year when all corporate logos suddenly become rainbow colored.
Yes.
You know, all of a sudden your Starbucks coffee or your Chevrolet Caprice, it just becomes rainbow colored for Pride Month.
They just pretend to care just for that 1 month.
That's right. Well, it's not that they pretend to care. It's that they want your dollars, especially for that month.
Absolutely. Yes.
You know,
yes.
That is the time when everybody's like, oh, look at me. Look at me. I'm supporting something. And I'll tell you a little funny story about that. Today, I played a gig. And it was at a retirement center, kind of an upscale place. I went in and played some classic swing tunes for their cocktail hour. And they were having a pride party. So they had rainbow flags on all the tables. And the activities director was walking around with butterfly wings on. And they were serving special, like, peach-colored Pride cocktails. And I was watching all this thinking, going, yes, this is the height of cultural acceptance right here, when it's just a version of St. Patrick's Day that you roll out in June.
Yeah. And that is happening at a senior care facility at that.
Yeah, exactly. And I would seriously doubt that that was a personal expression for any of the residents there. For them, it's just another excuse for a party. It's like, oh, I'll put on these rainbow colored socks my friend got me, and I will go downstairs and drink peach flavored cocktails. And that's what it was for them. You know, it's just another excuse to party. But for someone who's a part of that community, how do you look at something like that? And what does it mean to see things like the various lodges that put that on their social media?
Well, for me, definitely the corporate pride is something I am not honestly not a huge fan of, because I do know it's a very, it's just a money grab for the pink dollar. But when I do see our organization internally, lodges making the decision to make a statement or a post or hang a flag outside their building or anything like that, that promotes inclusivity and that queer people or gay people are welcome in that lodge. And I think that sends a very strong message that you probably don't see in a lot of other fraternal organizations. And I think because a lot of it comes down to like our name, we're Odd Fellows. And I definitely, as a queer person, I feel that in our modern society, you know, when you look at Odd Fellows, you think of people who are a little bit disenfranchised on the outside of the fringes a little bit. And so, yeah, we make great members. So might as well, you know, hang your flag up with pride and try to attract some of us to come and join.
Now, how about you, Chris? What is your feeling on that?
Well, I will say it's a great thing when I do see lodges post about Pride Month and how welcoming they are. And my lodge here recently, we just put up a giant banner outside. It says, everyone welcome. And it has the green links that are the color three links of the rainbow. And it has our website, which is the biggest thing that's been getting us membership, is people searching our website. The giant banner that we put up. So it's kind of nice just as being in a lodge that it has opened itself to welcoming more people and showing that we are an open door policy for everyone. We have an eclectic lodge. So it's nice being a gay person inside of a lodge that is accepting and open to other to everyone. So it's nice being on the inside looking out in a lodge and being grateful for other lodges that are doing the same thing.
Now, I'm not a member of that community, but I've spent much of my life adjacent to it. I went to Cornish College of the Arts in Seattle, which is on Capitol Hill, which used to be pretty much the gay neighborhood in Seattle. It's become a lot more decentralized in the last 20 years or so. But having been in the performing arts, you know, there's a higher than average number of gay people in the performing arts, theater, dance, music, etc. And there's something that I noticed, and I would be very curious to get your take on this. Everyone I've known who joined the Odd Fellows, they kind of have this experience that they go through where they jump into it, and a couple weeks in, they start to realize all of the signs and symbols and stuff from around them, and then they want to start buying every book, every pin, every collar they find on eBay, and they get really excited about the identity of being an Odd Fellow. And one thing that I saw in my 10 years on Capitol Hill is that people who had just come out were like so excited about being gay that they did everything they possibly could to express that. And I have noticed that parallel between joining the Odd Fellows and coming out. Now, is that something that either of you have experienced, have done, have seen? You know, what's your take on that?
That's a parallel that I totally missed. I think it's because I just couldn't see the forest from the trees, but I do. Yeah, I do see the affinity for your pride whenever you have this new identity that you are finally able to share with the world, and especially if it's one that you've had to keep to yourself for a long time. And so, yeah, that the fresh out, you could always tell, like back in the day, like the I just came out of the closet uniform was like a certain, it's like if you bleached your hair, you had a certain shirt on, had a certain haircut. It was just like the uniform of like the late 90s, early 2000s coming out of the closet. And I definitely, I'm a fan of swag in general, so yeah. Oddfellows swag is just I guess maybe the next iteration of my pridefulness, maybe, but that's an interesting parallel that you definitely were able to pick up on.
That's not something that I was really paying attention to, but it does make sense now that you did say that, Ainsley, that it is a pride. It's just mm-hmm. pride in a new organization, a new you, where you finally getting to express who you are. So it's just like anybody who is new to anything. They just want to buy everything they possibly can and show their pride in it. And yeah. It's definitely
a community identity. Yeah.
Yes. So.
And there's a performative aspect to that.
Yeah, absolutely. I know that, you know, when somebody is fresh into the gay community, and there's a learning process that has to go with that. And usually, you know, there's always a series of mentors ready to kind of explain how the thing works. I mean, nowadays it's a little bit different because the world is a lot more accepting. Everything is, you know, readily available on the internet. You could find a community before you go out into the world. But back in the day, pre-internet, you needed a mentor that was like your community liaison to show you where you needed to go and how to behave and what the rules were, because there was a lot of rules that had to, a lot of them were safety based, and a lot of queer culture prior to Stonewall up until probably maybe about like 20 years ago was kind of run a little bit like a secret society because of safety. And so I definitely feel that there is, you know, that now that you brought up these other parallels, yeah, there's a lot of that with the Oddfellows too, that you have pride in your community that you show outwardly, but you also have a lot you need to learn, even though you're really excited about it. And you're like, yes, this is me. This is who I am. You still need to learn a lot more about it. And you have to learn from people who've been there for a long time and have had those experiences that you also have, and they have had experiences beyond that, so that they can advise you on warning you of bumps in the road, of danger, or, you know, things that can happen that you might be completely just naive to and put yourself in harm's way. And I think definitely like the mentoring is something that is a big parallel between the two.
What about you, Chris? Do you have anything to add to that?
I would agree that the mentoring is definitely a big thing that that you take on when like for me, I had some good mentors in my lodge that helped me. And then when I finally did come out to my lodge, I felt comfortable enough to be able to do that. And just learning the history of Odd Fellowship and how there's been a lot of Odd Fellows in a sense, and just people that I can relate to and that I feel, you know, comfortable talking to on personal levels and professional level. So those friendships span throughout the U.S. of just people I've learned and met. So it's definitely a good thing to have that, those social networking and the brotherhood and sisterhood that we have when it comes to just freshly coming out and being around new people. So it's definitely.
I remember the night that I was initiated, you know, sitting down, getting the white collar put around my neck, And of course, the first thing that happened to me being a musician is our district deputy grandmaster at the time, Rich Osborne, knew that I was a musician, and he came over to me. He says, yeah, I understand you play the piano. I says, yes. He says, okay, I've got a job for you. Took me over and sat me down at the piano and says, okay, we're going to be closing the lodge soon. I'll tell you what to play when we get there. But I remember it was a very strange and unusual feeling that first night as an Odd Fellow, July 13th, 2000, when I was suddenly calling these people that I really didn't know brother. That was an unusual thing. Of course, now, you know, it's like 22 years later, I've passed Grandmaster, passed Grand Patriarch now, so... Okay, the hard thing is remembering whether I should call them brother or patriarch, depending on which meeting we're in. But at the time, it was a very strange sort of feeling to have this new personal identity, like, I am an Odd Fellow. I believe in the fatherhood of God and the brotherhood of man. I believe in friendship, love, and truth. You know, that whole idea that I'm now part of this group and relating to that. So, you know... not being gay or anything like that. Is there a parallel to that in the gay community?
I think probably the closest parallel to that is the just crossing that threshold of coming out to the people that are closest to you. Because oftentimes that is the threshold that holds most people back from living their truth. And I feel like that almost like that's part of that initiation process is the coming out. That is a very, once you put that out there, you can't take it back. It's like, once you say it out loud, it's, you know, kind of like saying an obligation or an oath. You're making it a statement very, you know, to the most important people in your life. And with Odd Fellowship, you're making that oath to people that in that moment are, for probably most of us joining, the people in that room, unless they're like your relatives, like a parent or something that's a member of the lodge, those people are not the most important people in your life yet. Yeah. So that is like a slow growing kind of closeness kind of thing. So it's a little bit of an opposite disconnect in that relation, but the idea that you are saying something that you can't take back out loud, putting that out into the world, out into the universe, and making a statement that you are changing your life in that moment, that and moving into a place where you can never go back to, like you're lifting the hoodwinks, you know?
Ooh, that's a good analogy. I like that.
So I had actually, so I joined, obviously, so I took oaths, did all my degree work. In a sense, I do understand where Ainsley is coming from as far as like that's like the parallels between the two. I actually had a different experience with, I guess I had in a sense two coming out as I came out to my family. And then I came out to the Odd Fellows, to my lodge, a different way through an app I use called GroupMe. So in a sense, it was definitely one of those experiences where it's like, once you put it out there, there's no changing or coming back out of it or any of that. So it was, I guess, different experiences for me compared to what Ainsley was saying. When I joined Odd Fellows, it was definitely a whirlwind as far as like doing a degree day. And it was it's hard to process everything. So so for me, I didn't really get that experience like Ainsley was saying, but I do understand the coming out, and it's that threshold you cross and then you're just out. So
now here's another question. Ainsley, you mentioned that there used to be some sort of coded signals in the gay community.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another parallel with Odd Fellowship. For our listeners who may have never lived in a large urban gay community, what are some of those signs that other gays would look for to know that they were in a safe place or to know that there was a certain degree of acceptance available?
So obviously we have symbols that represent different things in the community. So back in the day, there would be things that like you could wear either like a necklace with a certain pendant on it, or like a pinky ring, or the earring in the one ear was a kind of one that broke into the mainstream in the 80s. That people like, it's almost like once the straight world found out about it, it kills it.
Yeah.
Back in the 70s, they had the hanky code, which was a way for men to literally advertise what they were looking for or what they wanted or what they did, which I guess cuts down on conversation, makes it very clear and easy what you know, who's looking for what.
But it also provides a certain level of security to know that if someone has a certain color handkerchief in a certain pocket, this is someone that you don't have to be kind of cautious about talking to.
Right, because you couldn't just walk up to people and say, "Hey, I'm gay, you're gay, let's gay." You know, like even if you went to a gay, like a quote unquote gay bar, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of times, you know, back in the day, there were undercover police officers in there waiting to arrest people who were being out, basically, yeah. too out. So, you know, there's a lot of secret sort of body language, like winks and nods and glances and all sorts of things to kind of signal that, you know, wink, wink, nudge, nudge sort of deal. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of, you know, we talk about the recognition symbols that Odd Fellowship used to have. And so it definitely the secrecy and the different language and the different terms and the different roles that people play and the categories they put each other in and the kind of the parts we take on. There are definitely a lot of kind of, when you go into any subculture, there's going to be these little nuances that you have to learn in order to pass in that subculture, or else they'll peg you quickly as a tourist and then you will be shunned.
Yes. And no one wants to be shunned in the gay community, because
no,
you know, that's for people who don't have any kind of other kind of community in which they can express themselves. That becomes really important.
Yeah. And it's not like everybody within the diaspora umbrella of the rainbow of the community get along either. There's a lot of infighting. It's not a big happy family like somebody from the outside might think it is. It's a very very dramatic, and a lot of people jockeying for positions on what issues do we tackle next, what is a more pressing thing to go for legally and things like that. So there's a lot of infighting within the community because deciding, you know, how do we go about this, navigating this world? And at least with Odd Fellowship, we have a very well created structure of dealing with those issues. Whereas in the LGBT community, it becomes a hot mess. And then, you know, everybody is like a frenemy in a way, but everybody loves each other at the end of the day, but it also gets pretty sassy. So,
well, except for the sassy part, that does sound a lot like Odd Fellowship.
Yeah. Yeah.
So here's your solution. You can thank me, gays and lesbians, because I've got your solution. A Sovereign Grand Lodge of gayness.
Oh,
you know, get on that, guys. Come on, let's make this happen. You need to write a ritual. You need to have degrees. And then you need like a Sovereign Grand Secretary of Gayness, someone who can administer this and send all of the new gay kids their patches for what degrees they have achieved of gayness.
And of course, the first thing my mind goes to is like the village people wearing regalia.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
And that's like the Sovereign Grand Lodge of Gayness.
There would be like a gay, like an ode.
Yes. 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 But we do have, you know, I, you know, not to be silly about it, but I mean, there, I have a book that is homosexuality in fraternalism, I think is what the title is. You were looking at it, Christopher, when you were visiting me last week. Yes. That is about how fraternal orders have been a gathering place just by nature over the centuries for people who would, you know, previously, you know, we didn't have these terms that we do now, but would have been in a non-traditional life role, let's just say.
Yeah.
So, you know, joining groups that provided some sort of security, because if you weren't getting married and having a family and things like that, it provides a good way to gain access to some of those things that you otherwise wouldn't have if you needed some sort of community, that if you did get hurt or if you needed assistance, or, you know, if your family rejected you, you could literally have a new family who can, you know, help kind of cover things. Of course, previously those members would have probably been deeply, deeply, deeply closeted, mm-hmm. but they could have gotten those needs met through a fraternal organization.
I have known a few odd fellows throughout the years where I'm not saying that I suspect them of anything, because I certainly don't have finely attuned gaydar like both of you probably do. But were it to be revealed about them, it would not surprise me, you know, because, you know, at a certain point, if you're not married, there's probably a reason why you didn't get married, and there's probably something going on. Now, that's not to say that there aren't people who don't wait until later in life to get married, but I can definitely see why the idea of belonging to a fraternal order would be very appealing to people who haven't created their own kind of familial structures in that way.
And it's a place where we have a very specific type of relationship with each other that many of us know that, you know, it's the point is that we're not prying into people's personal lives. You could divulge what you want to divulge when you're comfortable to divulge such information. But otherwise, you could go along being a member and nobody will know anything about who you are or what you do outside of that lodge life. They might know what your occupation is,
yeah,
but maybe little else other than that. So, you know, it's a great way to, in the past, it would have been a great place to big giant air quote hide mm-hmm. in plain sight.
Correct. And it's definitely nice that we have those relationships with each other and it grows over time and you feel like you're comfortable to tell people in your close circle of friends within the Odd Fellows. And it's, you know, and it's never a problem. It's not like they're like, oh no, you're going to get kicked out because of it. It's not like in the military where it's like, don't ask, don't tell. It's never been like that. So that's definitely a good thing that's been like that through history and not even like that today. So,
you know, I'm glad you brought up that whole don't ask, don't tell era, because to me that always seemed rather kind of ridiculous, because there have been gay people basically since the beginning of time, and there have been militaries since the beginning of time. And I have no doubt that there have probably been a lot of gay people in the military since the beginning of time. Now, it's always problematic to go back and look at historical figures and try and ascribe a modern sense of what we would call sexual identity to people in antiquity, because social norms were different and certainly social interactions were different. And so things that we would look at one way from a modern perspective, we might look at very differently from an antiquated perspective. But the idea that you can come in and that somehow this aspect of your personal life should be a disqualifier for service, that has always seemed to be very kind of pointless and absurd to me. And so that's where I think that the Odd Fellows idea of just accepting everyone and allowing everyone to be who they are is very constructive, because we don't place any kind of a belief or anything on a certain way that you have to do things. And I think that's beneficial to us in the short term and in the long term, because people know that as an Odd Fellow, you can do any kind of different thing and still find a place that is going to be accepting. You're still going to be able to have a little community within your own lodge. And then depending how active you are at higher levels, a community beyond that home lodge, where you're going to find people who are going to accept you, who are going to get to know you as a person first before they learn anything else about who you are or what you might represent in a social or other kind of identity.
That also helps break down a lot of barriers, I'm sure, that we're probably not even able to quantify. Me being trans, I know for a fact I'm probably the first trans person a lot of these Odd Fellows have ever met.
Yes.
And I am the first experience with this, you know, somebody who has transitioned and now looks completely different and mm-hmm. sounds different and all that. And I started my transition while I was an Odd Fellow. I started this organization as She Ainsley, and yeah. It got a little hairy with my original lodge because, you know,
well, I'm sure you got a little hairy in the process.
It was getting hairy. Yeah. So, you know, and they were in a little Amish community, and you can't expect them to 100% understand. But anyway, everything's great now. And the support that I have gotten from this organization is just so impressive to me. And it's people, I think, assume that because it's an older aged group, predominantly, you know, most of our members are seniors, mm-hmm. That they would be closed-minded and not open and just, you know, shut you down. But it's like, no, like, I'm out. Everybody knows. It's not a secret. I talk about it. Like, it's nothing. Like, everybody knows. Nobody cares. It's great. You know, it's great to be out in an organization and not have it be a thing. And it's not something that I have to almost like carry the burden of, okay, well, I'm out in my whole life, except in this one niche of the where I have to stay quiet and small and not let anybody know just in case they don't like it. And it's great to not have to do that, which I feel like, you know, if there's certain places in, you know, I don't want to point my finger at religions or things like that, but there are certain faiths that are not welcoming. And if you were trying to come out, you would have to leave that church or that faith. And that's not an experience you would have with this organization, which is wonderful. And you get to actually be surprised at the ability of people to understand and even if they don't understand, be, you know, at least be kind to you and respectful. And that was not something I expected from the Odd Fellows overall as an organization, to be like completely just like, okay, well, that's cool, but like, are you still going to be on this committee with us?
Yeah.
Like,
in essence, it makes it into a non-issue. They're like, okay, you're transgender. All right, next item of business.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's like, exactly. Like, okay, cool. As long as you keep paying your dues and showing up, you know, like doing the work, that's what really we care about. So, yeah.
So for me, taking a look at it is, I came out pretty quickly to my lodge and I felt comfortable being able to. For me, it was, in my whole life, I've always been a person where I don't talk about my sexuality, because it's like, I didn't want that to fully define who I am.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a very hard worker. I'm a person that will easily help anybody that I can. So for me, it's been hard worker and then finally eventually come out to somebody. But the Odd Fellows helped me to realize I could be more myself and people accept and respect me, which helps me in my personal life as well. Like, besides Odd Fellows, just being able to just be more happy with who I am and not being like, okay, I have to hide parts of my life from people. So it's definitely helped, like, in that sense, at a personal level, which I hope, like, that means I can help others who actually would feel like they could join and actually have a support structure and feel accepted and not be like, well, I'm going to be shunned or pushed out and not be accepted and talked about. Like, so it's definitely nice having that support structure within the Odd Fellows.
It's great that they don't make it a big deal, because the less they make it a big deal, the less it's a deal. And the less we have to worry about it while we're here. And, you know, 'cause of course, you know, there are the members that you'll see the comments here and there that the naysayers, but I feel like that is by far a not the majority of the experience of the organization. I mean, I do know in certain jurisdictions, things are far more difficult for members who are out, but that is also a reflection of the climate of the culture of those jurisdictions, of the population at large. So it's one of those like, well, of course, it's not really any different inside Oddfellows when it's like that outside its doors, which is a sad thing to have to just kind of sit and accept. But it shows we do have a lot of work we still have to do for acceptance in the order. But I mean, shoot, we still have members who think that women shouldn't be in the Oddfellows Lodge. So, I mean, we've still got work we got to do. It's not a perfect animal by any means, but still to have this level of acceptance from the membership is still just something that, you know, whenever I see the odd person here or there say that this organization is bigoted and I'm like, but that's, you know, I've had a couple incidents that were isolated incidents, but you can't paint the whole organization with the brush of bigotry when you had an isolated incident in one lodge. That is not how bigotry shows that bigotry is boiled into the whole thing that is, you can't extract out. It just shows that one person. Yeah. It's just that one person and you can handle that, but it's this overarching, like I know people who were kind of like look from the outside, like, oh, I don't know, it looks like these people are really a certain type. And it's just like, no, actually they're not. They're pretty chill and they're cool. Give it a shot, you know?
And that's a testament to how effective the philosophical side of Odd Fellowship is. Mm-hmm. That here the world is shut out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we meet together for mutual counsel and aid in a lodge room under a cloak of secrecy so that we can be honest about who we are and what we do. You know, it is an Oddfellows Lodge where you should feel comfortable to go in and say, brothers, I am having a really difficult time with what's going on. I need help with this. I need help with that. And that's where your brothers should be open and honest with you and say, hey, we can help you out. We can support you. And so I think that same idea extends to the idea of sexuality and any other kind of personal characteristics. We accept that. We accept these people who are different from us. And I think at its best, Odd Fellowship provides kind of inadvertently a way for people who've never had an experience with any other kind of community to get to learn and discover about that community in a safe way for them. Because like you said, Ainsley, you're in a farming area, you're in Illinois. Mm-hmm. And so there isn't really a large gay community there. You know, you don't have gay bars that have drag shows on the weekends, and you know, there's no gay bingo and there are no gay picnics and all that kind of stuff that usually happens in larger, more urban areas. But that doesn't mean that those people are not out there. But the fact is, when you're going down to the True Value hardware store in town to get a bucket of hydraulic fluid for your tractor, that is not a venue where you're normally going to be interacting with the gay community and saying, so, you know, how was your gay picnic last week, Joe? How did everything go? You know, lots of fried chicken? You're not going to have that conversation there. Whereas you, one-on-one in the lodge room, where somebody says, you know, I heard this thing on TV. I don't have anybody else to ask. What does it mean? What does that mean? You know, what does that mean to you? What does it mean to me? What are some of these different things that I see that I've never experienced? And so, you know, it kind of makes you into an unofficial ambassador of the gay community.
Yeah, it kind of does whenever you're almost like a super minority in this organization, because because there is definitely a demographic skew in this organization that tends to be older male of a certain age group and white. And so, yeah, it's just by default of us being under the age of 60 makes us an outlier. And then to be like a member of the queer community is like, whoa, okay. But like, we seem to keep finding each other in the organization though, because it's like, you go to a session and it's like, you're looking around the room. It's like, okay, there's all these new people. And then it's like, you lock eyes with somebody and you're like, you're family. And I could tell. And then you just kind of like gravitate. It's like, I remember the first time I met Kelly, and I think it was in St. Louis, and it was literally like that. Yeah. Like our eyes locked from across the room, and just like, just like we knew.
Yeah. Now, since you brought up Brother Kelly, that's Kelly Hughes, past Grand Master of Washington. He was Grand Master right before I was, and he did a fantastic job. He accomplished some amazing things in this jurisdiction. He saved lodges. He got marginal lodges back on track with being really regular about their operations. I really feel like Kelly did the work of about three people during his term, which is pretty darn amazing. And there was a very funny incident that happened in 2018 in Baltimore, where you and Kelly were talking in the back of the room, and I happened to walk by and stop there. And a past sovereign Grand Master happened to be walking by at the same time, who knew Kelly and was kind of making one of those offhanded comments. Says, "Now, Kelly, I suppose he was out with the ladies last night. He must have really been having a lot of fun, judging by how you are here this afternoon. You seem to be somewhat worn out." And I, of course, had to jump in and say, "Oh, yes, you have no idea the kind of ladies' man that Kelly is."
I feel like he had like a reply. It was like about hanging out with his mom or something.
Yeah, first he had to give me the side eye. And then he's like, "Oh, yeah, you know, me and mom, we went to bed at 9 last night."
So rowdy.
Now you don't have to tell me, because I realize I'm not a member of the community, but is there like a secret sign or password that you guys have to distinguish one another?
There used to be a series of they called them tells.
Oh, okay.
That was what they called them back in the day, tells. There were a series of different like things you could do. I don't know what they all are, and a lot of them are dependent on the location.
Yeah.
But you know, like if you're in New York or London or wherever, you would have to, by one of your mentors, be taught the tells, and they would be different things that you would, like different ways you would set your hands, or like different things you would do to basically sit a certain way or look as, you know, it would be like it would be an encoded everything. It would be like an encoded message in, you know, things you would do to let people know. And it's similar to the recognition signs or the countersign. It would be, they were called tells. And there were like different hand signs and things like that, that would, you know, I'm sure there was probably, here's a perfect example.
Yes.
So the military, we spoke about the military with the don't ask, don't tell. Well, prior to that, back in, I think it might have been after the Second World War or maybe during, the military was so, especially the Navy, was so hell-bent on rooting out the homosexual menace and scourge that had been found upon their ranks. And they had heard about, you know, this secret code that was being like a friend of Dorothy or a friend of Mary. And so they were set up, they spent millions of dollars on this. They set up a special crew that would go to these different ports to hunt down who they thought it was, this lesbian that must have had some sort of secret network of running like a gay sex ring from different ports that you knew how to find people. It was like Tinder for the 1950s, that for friends of Dorothy or friends of Mary, depending on which version of the story you're going by. And they're trying to find this Dorothy. Who's this Dorothy? And or friends of Judy. That was another one. Friend of Judy, friend of Mary, friend of Dorothy. And they didn't realize that it was just a colloquialism, being like, oh, are you a friend of Dorothy's? That would just be a way that you would ask somebody if they were gay. But they thought it was meant that, like, you were on the list. This, like, this list of dating roster, I guess. And so they spent millions of dollars trying to hunt this woman down. They didn't find her. But it was like a literal witch hunt looking for this non-existent supposed lesbian that was the romance maker.
Wow.
Yeah.
That sounds both absurd and completely believable at the same time. And from what I've heard, the idea was that if you were gay at the time, you were susceptible to blackmail. So they wanted to make sure that there was no one who was in a position who could be blackmailed, who was in the military, which in that way, it makes sense because obviously you want to be able to trust the people that you have who you're serving with. But at the same time, the whole idea that communist agents are going to come and somehow blackmail you and turn you into a double agent, you're going to defect to the communists because you're gay. From the modern perspective, that's just absurd. It's crazy. Especially since the communist regimes tend to be some of the most repressive for gays and lesbians. You know, nobody goes to Cuba because they're like, oh, it's such a paradise for gays and lesbians. Look at this. It's wonderful. We can ride around in a 56 Packard and be gay all day.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't know if they're ended up actually being any blackmailed service members who were gay that actually had to serve the Soviets. But it definitely did seem like, I mean, at that time, it was definitely a death sentence in a way to have been outed.
Oh yeah.
And so it must've been very scary. Like I can't imagine how terrifying pre-Stonewall it was to be gay or lesbian and not know what to do. And so, yeah, that's why a lot of them had beard marriages and things like that. So, or they just tried to play as straight as possible. So it sucks. But I've got a couple good, great Oddfellows history stories that are relevant. So I'm going to tell my first one now, and I'll save the second one for after the break.
Perfect. So I like that setup.
So this story was told to me by David Shear from Portland. And it was about a past grand of one of the lodges. There used to be like a dozen or so lodges in Portland back in the day. And so people were moving out west. And so this member moved out west and joined one of the lodges in Portland and became a past grand and was, you know, very highly revered by this lodge. And this member, this brother passed away. This is in the late 1800s here, right?
Okay.
And so brother past grand dead goes, they take him to go get, whatever funeral care that they did at that time. And so the undertaker has the shocking discovery, you know, similar to the Billy Tipton story, that this past grand, this brother is actually female bodied.
Should have been a past noble grand.
Correct. So this undertaker is also a member of the lodge. And so the past grand is like, this undertaker is like, your past grand is a woman. What do we do? And so the officers in the lodge all came in, and I'm probably mistelling a little bit of this story. So I apologize if it's not 100% accurate, but so the officers come in and they tell the undertaker to, just get the embalming done and get everything done and put him back in his suit, put him in his coffin, and we're going to do his funeral service because he's our brother. And yep. That's all we know him as. And this is over, like, maybe going on, you know, 125, 150 years ago that this happened. And to think that, you know, that member had made such an impact on the brethren of the lodge that something like that, that would have been just, I don't know how that would have even been handled back then. And they're just like, you know what, we're just going to pretend like we didn't see nothing. Nothing to see here. This didn't happen. And we're just going to reverse back about 10 minutes ago and we're just going to carry on. And so they did. And so I assume the brother got buried with full honors and probably has a tombstone with their chosen name on it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really good analogy to Billy Tipton. And here's another Odd Fellows connection to Billy Tipton. Which is one of my lodge sisters, Amy Denio, is a really great sax player, also a very fine accordionist, and she's a member of the Tipton Saxophone Quartet.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
We might have to get Amy on as a guest one time just to talk about it. The whole Billy Tipton story is fascinating because after the club scene for jazz kind of went away in Seattle and up and down the West Coast where Billy used to play. He retired to Spokane and played over in Spokane because that circuit was still going a lot longer in a smaller, more out of the way city like Spokane than it continued in Seattle or Tacoma or anywhere else around here. So Billy was actually able to continue his jazz career over in Spokane. And at the same time, was living male and nobody knew. It wasn't until the end at the funeral home when they're like, something is a little different than what we expected here.
I remember when that happened because I was a child. And it's one of those crystal clear memories of mine. I remember one of my grandmothers talking about it and how her reaction to it and hearing the story and being like, obviously something really clicked with me in that moment because I was terrified because it let me know that, like, if you ever get found out, it's going to be the worst thing. That was like one of those, like, I probably shouldn't have been sitting in that room because that kind of probably set things back in a way that I probably can't even rationalize as an adult. But yeah. But something in little child me, I can't remember what year that was. Was that like 88 or something? 86, 88, something like that. I would have been 6, 8 years old.
I think it was the early 90s. I want to say like 91 or 92.
Okay.
That's what it seems like to me, but it's, you know,
whatever it was. I was for all intents and purposes, I was a kid. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was, yeah, I do remember that happening and being like, you know, cause that's what I thought people did was you know, like the movie, Just One of the Guys, you just cross dressed and hope nobody caught you, you know? That's what I thought it was. Like that, I didn't realize you could like actually do something about it other than, you know, hide, which seemed like a horrible option. So yeah, things are so much better now.
Well, I think this is a great opportunity for us to take a break. We have a message from our sponsor, Pig and a Pug Bath Stuff. I just saw on Instagram earlier today before we did the recording here. Amanda at Pig and a Pug Bath Stuff has a very limited run of special psoriasis-friendly soaps that she has made. So if you are interested in something, if you might have some psoriasis or maybe another skin issue and you need some special soap for it, go check out Pig and a Pug Bath Stuff on Facebook and Etsy because Amanda has a very limited supply of that in stock right now. Obviously, if you're downloading this episode 2 years in the future, you're going to be like, oh, great, I'm going to go get some. And it's all sold out by then. So make sure if that is something of interest to you, you get the opportunity to go check it out and see if it's something that might be helpful. In the meantime, we're going to take a break here, listen to a message from Pig and a Pug, and then we'll be back with more Pride and Odd Fellowship with special guest Chris Emmons.
I guess the message at Pig and a Pug is that everyone deserves better. When you use Pig and a Pug soaps, it's a guaranteed upgrade. Your smell, how you feel, and ultimately, how others around you perceive your newfound confidence. Pig and a Pug use the freshest ingredients, and every single bar is hand-cut and inspected. Most soap manufacturers use Tom Cruise-style robots every step of the way. Look, if you're fine with a company that uses recycled tires as exfoliants, ground-up iguanas as colorants, and words that you can't even pronounce that make you smell like something that you can't even describe, then go ahead and keep buying that same old supermarket stuff. Spring is breathing down our clammy necks, and Pig and a Pug has just the lineup for you. Every season has a hand-tailored line of new concoctions just for you. Remember, it's not just soaps. Their bath bombs, soy wax candles, and sugar scrubs are also common requests. Pig and a Pug are giving back as well. When listeners of the Three Links Oddcast use the coupon code THANKYOU24 on their Etsy store, you will not only get a quality service, an amazing product, and fast shipping, you'll also be helping animals. With each bar of soap sold, a portion of the proceeds will benefit an animal-related charity. See? This is an upgrade for them, too. Everyone wins. You, those around you, someone that may get this stuff as a gift, or animals. Look them up on Facebook, Etsy, or Instagram, and take just a moment to say,
"Hi, Amanda!"
All right, and we are back after our break, and I am here with our Lodge shout-out of the episode. And our Lodge shout out is to Gem City number 357 in Quincy, Illinois. They have been reinstituted. I'm not quite sure when that lodge originally closed, but it's probably been closed for many a decade. And they, a group of guys got together in a barbershop and reinstituted it. So welcome back on the map. In Quincy, Illinois, Gem City 357.
Okay, yay! Wait a minute. I'm confused here. I thought if you're going to recharter a lodge in Illinois, it has to be in a tattoo shop. What is this barbershop thing going on?
You know, I mean, we can't all be tattoo artists. So sometimes it takes another hands-on personal service trade to pick up the slack. So in lieu of the tattoo shop, they're going to use the barber shop.
Well, congratulations are in order for the new lodge, Gem City number 357 in Quincy, Illinois. Now, isn't that one of the Quad Cities?
No, Quincy is down kind of all alone, actually. It's right across the Mississippi from Hannibal, Missouri.
Oh, from Hannibal, Missouri. Okay.
Yep.
So that's further south from the Quad Cities.
Yes. It's basically like if you draw a straight line all the way west from here, it's like a little bit north. But like basically I just got to shoot west for 3 hours and that'll get to the opposite end of the state where Quincy is.
Well, that's great. So congratulations to all the new members of that new lodge, Gem City 357 in Quincy, Illinois. Now, Ainsley, you recently attended the, your grand sessions in Illinois?
No, those are coming up in October. No, I recently attended a picnic.
Oh, that's right. It was a picnic and you passed out plenty of stickers for the Oddcast.
Yes.
Excellent. Well, hopefully we've got some members from Gem City 357 listening. And for those of you out there who are listening to this podcast, maybe for the first time, because you picked up one of our stickers, maybe at the California sessions, which Ainsley and I attended, or maybe at the Oregon sessions, which I attended, or maybe even at my own home sessions here in beautiful Yakima, Washington, and you got a sticker and you're tuning in for the first time, we want to welcome you and say please like the podcast, subscribe to it so you get all the new episodes as they come out. And if you have anything to share with us, like a lodge that's doing something great that should be recognized, tell us about it. We'll put them on our lodge shout out. You can email us at 3linksodcast. That's the number 3, not the word 3, the number 3linksodcast@gmail.com. You can also look us up at 3linksodcast.com. And we're also on Facebook. We're on Instagram. So wherever you're at out there in the world of the internet, look us up and be sure and like and subscribe the podcast, so that we can keep doing what we're doing, sharing the stories of Odd Fellowship. And today we've got a guest with us, Brother Chris Emmons, who works at the Sovereign Grand Lodge office back in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. And since it's June, we're celebrating here in fabulous style for Pride Month. So before the break, Brother Ainsley, you told us you had a second anecdote you wanted to share.
Yeah, so in my research into Odd Fellows and writing for the Heart and Hand blog and things like that, I came across this really fascinating bit of history that I was not aware of before I became a member. And it just blew me away why it's not more public knowledge. And it doesn't specifically pertain to the Independent Order of Odd Fellows. It is for the Grand United Order of Odd Fellows. But we're all Odd Fellows and it's relevant, and I consider them our brothers. And so I am very, you know, just amazed that this part of queer history has almost kind of been unlinked from the Odd Fellows. And that is the if anybody has seen the FX TV show Pose or the documentary it was based on, Paris is Burning, which came out in 1989, about the Harlem drag and ballroom scene, which is a competitive form of drag. And it's not necessarily everybody dressing up in to appear as a different gender. Sometimes it's just about dressing up in a way that you just would normally not appear because you were too poor. So you would dress up to look wealthy and to try to pass as wealthy, and they would judge you based on how well you did. Well, anyway, these balls continue to this day, and it's a very important part of African-American history and Latino history and Hispanic history across the United States and across the world. But specifically out of the Harlem Renaissance, these drag balls started, and they were started in actually before the Harlem Renaissance. They were started in 1869. So this is just a handful of years after the Civil War ended. It was started by the Grand United Order of Odd Fellows, Hamilton Lodge number 710 in Harlem, New York. In 1869, they had the first drag ball that the lodge held, and they held it every year until that lodge closed as a fundraiser. And you could look it up online. You could just look up the Hamilton Lodge balls. You could look up the Harlem Ferry balls. You could look up the Odd Fellows balls, and you could find his articles, old newspaper clippings, several websites that have documented it very well, that go through different points in time when they would have the Odd Fellows would have these balls. And when it got to the 20s and the 1930s, you know, they're getting to be about, you know, 60 some years in with this. They did it for like 70 some odd years until the lodge folded. And then it just continued on its own as it does today. But, they had 5,000 people show up one year to this thing, and it was had gotten so big that they couldn't hold it in Harlem. They had to hold it in Midtown. So for African Americans to be able to rent a facility in Midtown Manhattan during the 20s is a feat of its own. But to have 8,000 people show up total, 5,000 people gained entry, and then the fire marshal had to shut it down, and 3,000 people were waiting outside to get into this event. So this was a big deal. And of course, it raised a lot of eyebrows at the time. A lot of people didn't like it because it was offensive to their sensibilities. But the culture of drag and competitive ballroom that we have today, that you see that, it's a, you know, RuPaul's Drag Race is a direct descendant of it. The drag shows that you attend in every, you know, every middle market on up to large community is descendant from it. You could thank the Grand United Order of Odd Fellows for bringing that to you.
All right. So who's going to send an Odd Fellows application to RuPaul?
Well, since RuPaul lives in Wyoming, she could join one of the lovely new Wyoming lodges that have popped up.
That's right. Get on that, Rollins number four. Get RuPaul in your lodge.
Yeah.
I wonder what part of Wyoming?
I think it's a Jackson Hole area. I think that's where all the rich people are living right now.
There you go. Jackson Lodge number eight. Hap Langley would love to have another member for that lodge. I'm sure of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jeffree Star moved out there too. So, you know, there you go.
Wow. Although the question that I would have is, should they join the Oddfellows Lodge or the Rebecca Lodge?
Or both.
Yes, join both. Like me, I am a Rebecca. I belong to Eola Rebecca Lodge number 63 here. And I look forward to my Rebecca meetings because it is a fun, different kind of variation on Odd Fellowship. And I think it brings a lot of meaning to my regular lodge meetings to go to my Rebecca meetings and see a slightly different way of doing a lot of things. So now, Christopher, what are some experiences that you have had as a gay Odd Fellow, and maybe some things that you would tell other people about it, either to make the experience more straightforward for you, or maybe things they should possibly avoid doing?
So maybe just some experiences that I've encountered is just being more open to people and understand that you should be more mindful of things that you say or do. And just realize, you know, just coming out allows other people to come talk to you in a sense as well. So it's like, I've definitely had people come to me and I would have never known they were, you know, gay or lesbian or bisexual, or what have you. So in a sense, it's those are some experiences I've had, but my biggest thing is just being more mindful and allowing people to realize that they should think before they speak. That's something that we as Odd Fellows have to do, even not just in the sense of for being about people being gay. It could be about somebody being a different religion or some just practices they don't do. It's just being more mindful. That's something we as Odd Fellows should be doing.
That's some really good information there. Now, another question that I would have for both of you, have you ever had some adverse experiences in Odd Fellowship as a result of your identity?
I did have some, but I think it was a lot of it was just due to the nature of a public transition that a lot of times I also was at fault because I should have maybe done a little bit better of pre-explaining things instead of assuming that, you know, they could figure it out, or just mentioning it once might not have been enough, or, you know, sometimes I probably, so it was a little bit of a learning experience for me as well to think, you know, okay, maybe, you know, these people behaved in this certain way. However, maybe I could have approached it a little bit wiser to make it a little less scary or weird for them. So I think in that situation is a little bit of a two-way street on that one. So, but other than that, I've really had nothing but love.
Well, what about you, Chris?
I've actually not had any adversity to what me coming out. I've been open arms for my lodge once I came out, which is definitely unexpected in a sense. But I've had experiences in other parts of my life that I've had adverse reactions to it, where I've just had people that just completely stop talking to me, which is fine in a sense. You know, we all have our faults, or are open to accepting things. The best thing about Oddfellows is the amount of respect I've been given, just as a person. And at once I came out, I think it gained more respect for people to realize that I'm open, honest about things. And that's the biggest thing I think Oddfellows has helped me with, is gaining more respect for other people as well.
Now, I think that's a great answer, because it shows that in many ways, the lives of gay and lesbian and other people are quite mundane. You know, though we get sometimes a very sensational view of those lives. Like, if the only thing you knew about it was RuPaul's Drag Race, you might think, gosh, isn't it a lot of work to get dressed up like that to go to the store and go shopping? But in reality, so much of life is very mundane and unextraordinary, but the only part that people pay attention to are the non-mundane and quite extraordinary parts. So it's good to be able to go to Lodge and see just these regular everyday people who are there just living their lives, going to Lodge, you know, serving on the committee to plan the Lodge summer picnic. You know, that is every bit as much a part of gay life as going out and doing parades and shows and other things like that. But we never get to see those kind of everyday normal things. So it's good to be able to go out and just live those lives and have those experiences, where other people can see it and go, oh yeah, this really isn't anything all that interesting. It's rather mundane.
Yeah. I tell people all the time that, you know, being a tattoo artist, of course, everybody thinks, you know, like, oh, you live this really like just rock star lifestyle. And it's like, I tell people, it's like, I do interesting things, but that doesn't necessarily make me an interesting person. Like, at the end of the day, I am painfully boring. Like, I just want to go upstairs and be quiet and, you know, watch my TV and just chill out. Like, I'm not like going out and partying every night and, you know, hanging out with celebrities or whatever, you know, like every day and like, woo, you know, it's, you know, or like the exotic idea of the other, basically, that people kind of get hooked on, and they want to understand it, but in their attempts to understand, instead of asking the person who's the point of reference, they fill in the blanks themselves. And sometimes what they fill in the blanks with is a bunch of nonsense that is really does not reflect the reality of what the situation is. But from the outside, it might make sense. But from the inside, you're like, where the heck did you get that from? So, yeah.
Yeah, it's like people who think that I spend all of my time at home wearing lederhosen.
Nope. Yeah.
Leather pants are strictly for the job, people. That's
and polishing your accordions.
Yeah. Speaking of leather pants, one of my good friends and a brother in the Lodge, Greg Powers, he's played tuba in the Bavarian Villagers band in the Seattle area for many, many years. And he and his friend, who also played in the band, of course, when you play in a German band, you have to have lederhosen. So, of course, they have lederhosen. Well, what does lederhosen mean in German? It means leather pants. So at one of the gay bars up on Capitol Hill in Seattle, of course, they had leather night. And so Greg and his friend, as a joke, put on their lederhosen and their German shirts and their Trinkerhüte. And they went out to the bar that was having leather night and pretended to be German tourists who were lost and had gone into the wrong place. And so they're walking in, looking around, and it's like, ist das nicht ein Ledernacht? And acting very confused, finally one of the bartenders came over and says, hey, I don't know if you guys actually speak English, but this is a little different kind of leather pants than what you're wearing.
It would have been perfect if they turned around and then the cheeks were cut out.
Well, another of Greg's stories, maybe I'll get him on the podcast one of these days to tell musicians' stories. The Bavarian Villagers, the Bayerische Dorfkapelle, used to play the Oktoberfest that was held at Fraternity Snoqualmie. Now, in 19th century Germany, the whole naturalist tradition, there was a a tradition of nudity, that by being nude all the time, you would be closer to nature. And so they established a nudist colony way up in the hills outside of Seattle called Fraternity Snoqualmie. And being German, of course, they had to have an Oktoberfest. So every year the band would go out. And normally when you play at an Oktoberfest, you put on either your dirndl or your lederhosen to play. Since this was a nudist colony, everyone was allowed to play nude. And so the band members would show up and just instinctively they would ask, hey, is there a place where I can take off my lederhosen? And they're like, it doesn't matter. This is a nudist colony. Just undress here. And then they're like, oh, okay. However, I will say this now for the record. I am not playing accordion naked. No way, no how. Nope, not going to happen. Absolutely not.
I was going to say, if I went anywhere naked, I would get trank darted, and I would wake up with a radio collar and a tag in my ear.
We have him here under observation, Doctor. What do you want to do with him? Just let him go for a while.
We have this small bear that small furry animal wandering around.
We've finally captured a juvenile Bigfoot. I knew it would happen one of these days.
We think it's about 5 years old, judging by its height.
Well, it sounds like you need to pay a visit to one of the bars up on Capitol Hill. You'd probably be very popular there.
I probably would be.
Yes, you could go on Woodsman Night. It would be great.
Yes.
Now, another thing that we talked about during the break is the small but present minority of gay leaders in our organization. Because although we do not take any official position on anything like that as Odd Fellows, it's always nice to know that we do have a little bit of diversity and some different viewpoints coming in and taking leadership roles. I know that in my jurisdiction, we've had a couple of grandmasters recently who were gay. Actually, the one before me and the one after me. So I was just lucky to be surrounded by greatness, I guess.
Yeah, and we've been fortunate to have, a very good handful that I'm aware of past Sovereign Grandmasters who are quote-unquote family. And I'm sure, of course, lost to the dust of history, but there's probably a long line going back of probably family members who ended up in high-ranking positions, because you got to have, as few encumbrances as possible if you're going to climb that ladder to sit in that chair. And that kind of, if you're unmarried and you don't have children, that actually kind of gives you a little bit of an advantage strategically if you're going for a leadership role.
Yeah, without a lot of immediate family demands on your time, you have a lot more freedom to be able to put time into the lodge and what you're doing with the lodge. So that totally makes sense. I can see that as being kind of a factor that would almost encourage gay leaders to come forward in the order. You know, it seems like it would be very amenable.
It definitely is.
It requires a lot of travel and time and energy and expense. And you got to have all of that.
Yes, I've definitely, since me coming in 4 years, I just took on being department commander for my state, for West Virginia. So that's something I've taken on. So I'm busy with that. I work here at Sovereign Grand Lodge. I'm part, I'm do active Zoom meetings with my lodge back in West Virginia. I'm active with my associate member as a lodge here, part of Rebecca Lodge. I'm not so active with encampment. I'm hoping that we'll get that going with Zoom for my lodge, my encampment back home. So for me, it's allowed me to stay active, and I take it as a challenge to do more and more and more. So it's nice just to have friendships and to put myself forward and to take on more leadership roles and to show others that, that it can be done. I've only been an Odd Fellow for 4 years. So I think I've done quite a bit in just 4 years.
Well, I would say just what you've done by helping out in the Sovereign Grand Lodge office is very impressive.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
And much needed.
Well, is there anything else you brothers would like to talk about? It's the end of our Pride celebration here, so get your rainbow parade in while you still can.
Yes, get it in now, and then I guess even just keep on going afterwards, because, you know,
oh wow,
you get to be gay all year long, not just
not just in June. So like on July 1st, it doesn't just go away.
Correct. Yeah, I don't just go hang that up in the closet for the next 11 months.
rip those flags down.
Yeah, like, oh, I gotta put this away.
Sorry, kids, time to pack up the gay. Oh, mom, but we want to play. Sorry, kids, yeah, it's July now. Gotta hang up the red, white, and blue for the month.
Only three colors for July.
All right, that brings us to the Odd Podge here. I know what I'm going to be sharing for this episode's Odd Podge. And for those of you who are hopefully just tuning in for the first time because you got a sticker at Sessions, this is the part, kind of like Good of the Order at the end of the podcast, where we share whatever we feel like. So I've got something that I want to share, and hopefully, Ainsley, Chris, you'll each have something that you'd like to share with all of our listeners. So who would like to go first?
So last weekend, we had our odd market for the first time in a couple years, thanks to COVID. So we did a smaller scaled down odd market this year because, you know, you don't want to plan a giant event that ends up having to get completely scrapped. So when we started planning it, and then the planning committee for odd market overlaps with the Tuscola GSA boosters, of which I'm also a member of, as well as several other members of our lodge are members of. So they have an annual, well, they last year had their first annual 5K. And so we're planning this odd market. We're like, well, let's just piggyback off the 5K. So then we kind of combined those to be the same day event. So we had this Color Run 5K that raised money for the Tuscola GSA Club. And then we had the odd market, which raised money for the lodge. And then after that, we held a drag show. This is something that the students had asked for several years ago. Originally, it was going to be a small drag show of just students up in the lodge hall. And then COVID hit, and then that idea got put on the back burner. And students still wanted, you know, us to do some sort of event like that. So we just kind of started planning bigger, bigger, bigger. And then we got a bunch of local drag queens on board. And so we held an actual drag show with like 7-8 performers, three student performers, and 200 people showed up for that. And Chris even came out from Winston-Salem to spend a few days helping out with the event. And so Chris ran in the 5K and helped with the odd market and helped with the drag show, and it was just a huge help. And yeah, so my lodge was able to raise around, I think about like $1,400 is what we got from the vendor fees and the raffle money and stuff for the odd market. So we were able to get ourselves, you know, a nice little bit of money that we're going to be able to put back out into the community. Hopefully.
That's fantastic. But soon. I have one question. What exactly does local drag queen mean when you're in Tuscola, Illinois? Do they come down from Champaign or Chicago?
So most of the queens from the Champaign, west of us in Decatur, some south in Charleston. So kind of in that 30, 45 minute bubble of, but a lot of the queens that performed are actually from smaller rural towns. And that's why they got on board with it, because when we approached them and we're like, hey, you know, we're a small town of 4,500 people. We've got this GSA club, we've got a boosters club, and we want to put on this drag show. Would you be interested in performing for the students? And the performers who are, you know, the small towns, they remember what it's like. They know what it's like. And the whole point was, I wish somebody had done something like this when I was in school. And so we were all able to come together, put the show on. We had like 200 people show up, filled the room. We had to even get more chairs out. And it was amazing. It was just such an amazing event to come together, and it just went off without a hitch. And one of the head performers was like, okay, so we're coming back next year, right? So it looks like we're going to be doing another one next year.
I never would have imagined there would have been enough performers to fill the bill out there in the middle of farm country, but...
Yeah, and we called it Queens in the Corn.
Queens in the Corn, I like that.
Yep.
All right, Brother Chris, you have something you'd like to share with all of us?
Yes, so I'll piggyback a little bit off of Ainsley and say that I definitely had a great time last weekend going to Tuscola. My first time I've ever been to Tuscola. I've actually was born out in Illinois, so it was kind of different to go back to Flatland because I'm used to mountains. And so it was nice homage to go back there to get to, you know, help another Oddfellow Lodge out. It's always great when you can meet new people. I've talked to Ainsley for a while now. It was great to meet him in person, get to actually see other Oddfellows, meet other Oddfellows, as well as helping younger generation of hopefully Oddfellows, just help them to be active in their community, just come out and be themselves. So that was definitely a good thing. My shout out really is going to be, for another reason I went to Tuscola was to get a tattoo. I'm an Oddfellow. I like helping other Oddfellows in other ways. I have other lodge members that run businesses and do different trades. So it was great to do, to go out there. I got a tattoo. I was able to come up with some ideas of what I wanted. Ainsley put them all together, created a tattoo that I'm in love with. I've wanted for about 3 years. And I've followed him on Facebook for a while now. So it was great. Tattoo shop is called Vintage Karma. Tattoo shop in Tuscola, Illinois. So I would definitely highly recommend him or any of the people he works with in his shop. They do great work. Follow him on Facebook. They have a website. You can probably, you know, set up a tattoo if you'd like to. So that's going to be my shout out. And I definitely appreciate being able to help other Oddfellows, either for their lodge, their business, friendship.
Thank you.
Well, that's great, and glad to hear that you could get tattooed by another Oddfellow.
Yeah, that was awesome.
We have quite a growing community of Oddfellows tattoo artists all around the country.
We do. Shane Simmons is actually here right now doing a guest spot. So,
ah, Brother Shane, nice.
Yeah, he's here from Louisville visiting for a few days.
You need to line up a couple of the other famous Oddfellows tattoo artists. We'll get them on the podcast.
Yeah. I'll just get Luke Westman and Oliver Peck on the roll.
Or you guys could have an Oddfellows tattoo convention.
That is a dream of mine. That is a dream of mine.
That's right.
That'd be great.
That would be awesome. I would love to see something like that because it's perhaps one of the most niche things that could ever be put together, an Oddfellows tattoo convention. Get all six of the Oddfellows tattoo artists in America in the same place. Oh, you can even have competitions like who does a better patriarchal tent.
There you go.
Correct. Yeah. And who does the oddest tattoo?
Ooh,
yeah.
Yes.
We could definitely give out different, you know. So, but that would definitely be an awesome fundraiser, maybe.
Yeah.
For a cause.
Yeah.
So that would be, you know, something cool.
Well, for my Odd Podge, I want to share something for the other holiday we celebrate in June, which is National Accordion Awareness Month. Friends, are you aware of the accordion? This wonderful musical instrument that was first patented in 1829? Well, I'm here to tell you that the accordion is a wonderful musical instrument and can be used in many different styles of music. You can play it in a Polish polka band, a German polka band, a Slovenian polka band, or even a Czech polka band. Yes, be aware of the accordion. It's a wonderful musical instrument. Now, last weekend, I got the opportunity to go back to the town of Leavenworth, Washington. No, not the federal penitentiary in Kansas. The cute little Bavarian town up in the Cascade Mountains. For the return of the Leavenworth International Accordion Celebration. I'm on the board of the Accordion Celebration. And this was my first year running the competitions in person. I was set to take over the competitions for 2020. The festival got canceled for COVID. I was going to do it again in 2021, but we only had a very abbreviated festival. I think it was 2.5 days. There were no workshops or concerts. And the competition was handled entirely online with students submitting videos of their performances, Well, this was the first time I actually got to run a real in-person competition, and it was a big success. I was very happy with it. We had some wonderful concert performers at the festival. We had some great students who did wonderful work preparing pieces for the competition. And overall, I am very happy with it. It's good to see that there are still people out there who are interested in the accordion because it's a wonderful instrument and it's certainly done a lot to enrich my life.
Awesome.
So that's the Odd Pod.
How many?
Yes.
Oh, I was going to say, how many people generally like go to this event, and like how far away do they come from?
Most of the attendees are from the Pacific Northwest. So mm-hmm. kind of the Spokane, Portland, Seattle area. Occasionally we get some people who come over from Western Montana or from Idaho. We usually have a collection of people who will come down from British Columbia and Alberta because there used to be an event in Kimberley, BC called the Kimberley International Old Time Accordion Championships. And the competition and concerts and everything at Kimberley were fantastic. I went to Kimberley in 1996 and got to see Frankie Yankovic live when he was actually still playing accordion. So that was a big thrill for me. But when Kimberley ended in 2011, I think it was, a lot of the people who used to go to that event, you know, if they were still interested in going to an accordion festival, they'd come to Leavenworth. So I would say we probably get about 600 attendees.
That's a good amount of people.
And there are accordion vendors who show up. Tempo Trend Studios comes down from Victoria, British Columbia. And they always have a nice accordion display. Potosa, of course, my buddies at Potosa Accordions, they're celebrating their centennial this year. They were founded by Carlo Potosa in 1922 in Seattle. So they had a big centennial display and had some concert artists. So it's a good-sized festival. It takes place in Leavenworth, Washington, which is about 3 hours east of Seattle up in the Cascade Mountains. It's a beautiful little Bavarian town. And yes, at one time they did have an Oddfellows Lodge there, but they consolidated with one of the other lodges in the valley, oh, probably 40, 50 years ago. And the last Oddfellows Lodge left in Chelan County, which is that part of the state, is Prosperity 301 down in Wenatchee, which I am actively soliciting new members for because we need to get a couple more people so we can hang on to that charter. So anybody listening in Chelan or Douglas County, Washington, who wants to become an Oddfellow, email us. We need some more Oddfellows in Wenatchee.
Very good.
All right. So thank you so much, Chris. It's been a delight having you on the show here. Please keep up all the great work you're doing at Sovereign Grand Lodge. We all appreciate that. The work that you do helps make Odd Fellowship better all over the world. And I really mean that.
All right. Thank you very much. I've appreciated being able to come on.
For our next episode, we have our second anniversary spectacular.
Woohoo!
Hard to believe we've been doing this now for 2 years. We've gone through three other co-hosts, and we're still plugging away at it here on the Three Links Oddcast. So our next episode, we're going to do a celebration of our first 2 years of podcasting. So once again, if you've not yet, be sure and like and subscribe to the podcast. If you want to give us some information about what a lodge near you is doing, send it to us at threelinksoddcast@gmail.com using the number three, not the word, or look us up on the web, threelinksoddcast.com. And that is with the word actually spelled out. So on behalf of Ainsley and myself, we'd like to thank all of you for listening. Bye-bye, everybody.